Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark Monday, January 15th. And coming back from a fantastic road trip for the Vancouver Canucks. Four games since we last talked. It is, 7 points out of a possible 8, which no one really expected out of this road trip, but it's a fantastic result. I will break it all down for you here. As always, joined by my co-host, Canuck Clay. How are you doing this evening?
Parker, almost as good as the Canucks. 11 points in their 14 out of 14. Even more than the eternal optimist us that we predicted, and I know we'll get into that. But yeah, it's a great time to be a Canucks fan. It's we're complaining about cold weather, my furnace breaking down, yet I'm not the one who had to drive back over the border just to fly to an afternoon game on a national holiday. How ridiculous was that?
Yeah, that's a nightmare. I'm very surprised it didn't get bumped to like the afternoon, being, you know, it's gonna be what, noon local start? No, it's Ohio. Ohio's 3 hours ahead.
Yeah,
but either way, 1 o'clock Eastern start. They had a few hours ahead they could have moved it to, but no, the Canucks show up the night before at like 9 o'clock, and they get out there and honestly had an okay start, allowed a lot of shots and got a point out of it. And what is, like, again, not that Columbus is a fantastic team by any stretch of the imagination, but that is as scheduled losses can possibly get.
You got it.
Yeah. And a point. That's fine.
And a point to, and we lose a point to a team that doesn't matter because they're not battling us for a playoff spot. So is the best case scenario out of a loss. How's that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a shootout too. So you can just be like, it doesn't even count.
Exactly. We just got to learn how to shoot somewhere other than between that goalie's leg. And that guy was pumped. I know we're going to talk about that too. By the way, speaking of weird times, Jason P saying, my favorite show on a Monday afternoon. So I don't think he's talking about the Canucks game. I think he's talking about us. But does that mean he's behind us in time?
Hawaii? But even then, it's evening. It's like 8 o'clock there.
Regardless, Jason, we appreciate it. Where are you watching from? Let us know. We're really curious now.
My bet's Alaska. Awesome.
Okay, let's go with Alaska.
Wow. Yeah, so four games over the past week. And I mean, just the road trip as a whole, right? I mean, you see the title. Canucks had a near-perfect road trip. And really, going into this road trip, this was like Canucks had almost no buffer in the Pacific, like a minimal buffer going into this road trip. It was 15 days ago now that this thing started, essentially. And we thought, wow, okay, this is where the Canucks will lose a little bit of ground, right? They'll probably drop, you know, maybe they drop to second in the Pacific, right? Maybe they win, you know, maybe they go 3-3-1, maybe they go 4-2-1, 4-3. It's a tough Eastern road trip. There's some tough opponents, the whole New York swing, yada, yada, yada. I don't think anyone expected them to only lose to St. Louis and Columbus and go out and beat New Jersey and New York and New York and Pittsburgh. Buffalo might have been a little bit more expected, but that is, spirits have been so high for a loss against Columbus, I think, just because of how fantastic the entire trip has gone.
Such a good point. This time before we actually went live, Parker, I did go back and watch the last 5 minutes of last week's stream. Cause you know how we walk in here and we say, I think I predicted this. I think you predicted this. So I wanted to make sure, and you're right, we were both saying they're going to lose against Pittsburgh or maybe have struggle against the Islanders. I don't think we had it, you're right, losing the first game of the road trip to St. Louis and the last game of the road trip against Columbus. By the way, I know people are excited about the Canucks. We are not even 5 minutes in. We have 76 people in here, which is crazy for us. We have people from Japan. Awesome. We have people from Australia. So everyone, no matter where you're watching from, thank you. We're grateful to you. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And the Rams lost. So it was a great weekend all around.
You don't like the Rams? You don't like them?
No, they're a division rival.
Okay.
So we have four games to go back on and touch on, and three of them being wins, two of them being quite close wins. And of course, the game today, which my memory is a little bit spotty of because it was 10 a.m. on a work day and, you know, I was working and I had it over there and I would peek every once in a while and be like, oh, they're winning. So let's rewind all the way back. The Canucks they played last Monday against the Rangers, which we did recap because we did a show last Monday. So Tuesday, January 9th, the Canucks hop over to the island and play the Islanders. And I mean, every single stat line you look at here, right? It's a 5-2 win for the Canucks. Shots 34-20. Canucks had four power plays. They go 0-4. They still score five. What a you know, on a back-to-back of all nights, fantastic way to get this win streak really started, right? I mean, I guess that would be win number three. Win number three. Technically, a streak's at two, but three is really where a streak starts.
You know, Parker, whenever you have four games in a week, I can't remember anything about this game.
Of course not.
I do know that three defensemen scored. I remember that was like the big story out of this game, but I'm sure you'll help us jog our memories on this one, Parker.
Yeah, I mean, the first goal is Filip Hronek, and it starts with him murdering a man with his slap shot. He has done that over and over and over again. This entire road trip, he probably injured six guys. So he takes a guy out with a slap shot. Puck ends up coming to him. He's in the faceoff dot. Perfect shot, top far corner. To make it 1-0, Mikheyev and Garland getting assists on that one. And then we get a Quinn Hughes goal shortly after that, where this was the really nice one where he beats a guy on the wall, cuts into the middle, protects the puck, and just fires a quick shot past, I assume Sorokin was the goalie again. I don't remember that far back, but he did make it 2-0.
Yeah, and he kind of mesmerized the whole Islanders team. And it's not like they were on a power play. So it's not like there are only four Islanders players. No, they're all five skaters just kind of standing there watching Hughes deke, twirl, and take the middle of the ice. And going back to the Hronek goal, yes, I do remember this now. And I actually get excited once a game. Like it happened again today. He'll injure someone with his shot. It's quite fascinating, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, he's got a heck of a shot. So the Canucks up 2-0 going into the second. Not much happens for half the period. And then we get some vintage Elias Pettersson to start the second period. He ends up with a really nice pickpocket with some help. I'm not sure who. I think it was Besser who maybe helped with that, or was it? It was Hronek. Hronek helped him pick a guy's pocket. Pettersson gets the puck. Just super nice deke to the backhand. Goes backhand across the crease to Miller, who could probably shovel this upstairs. He's capable of it, but he goes back to Pettersson, and there's no doubt about it. He just sort of slams it in, makes it 3-0.
Yeah, they're playing patty cake or pass the puck to each other right in front of Sorokin, right in the crease. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Nelson gets one back on the power play for the Islanders, and then we have Tyler Myers doing a little Thomas Vanek impression, almost just walking in down the right wing on a 4-on-3 rush, basically. And just gets to the top of the circle and lets it go. We need more of this from everybody.
Yep. Did you see the interview with Murph during the intermission?
No.
So Murph basically says to him, and by the way, great shot. That was clocked at 95 miles an hour. And it actually caught Myers by surprise. And he started laughing in the interview. And he goes, cool.
That's quite funny. He has so much leverage, right? Like so much time to build up momentum.
Yes.
Nelson got one back to make it 4-2, which allows the goalie to get pulled and allows Dakota Joshua to make a really nice move at center ice. Makes a steal, little pull back to the forehand, fires it from his own side of center. Empty net merchant, Dakota Joshua, 11 goals on the season at this point to make it 5-2.
Yeah, that's do you remember the Islanders? I know we talked about this when we were previewing this game. The Islanders game that was here is a lot closer. Is the overtime? Is it Horvat's fault for not skating fast enough? This they smoked them 34-20 shots, 17-4 in the second period. This was a nice game.
Yeah, that was great, and it was one that I was pretty nervous going in. Right, I mean, like sure you just beat the Rangers pretty handily, but they must have expended every little bit that they had in that game. You'd think.
Yep.
But no, truly not.
That's right. Back to back. We got to give him even more credit. That's true.
Yeah. And then we go to Thursday as we try to be fairly quick because four games to go over. we're, of course, on the clock here. And this one starts with, again, it's Elias Pettersson doing Elias Pettersson things, right? Stops or makes a nice little move just inside the blue line to create separation. Besser goes hard to the net. And I'm looking at where Pettersson decides to pass this puck. Besser has no separation here on the defender, right? Like the defender's on him, and just it's the exact moment that Besser's stick gets ahead of the defender's that puck gets there and he gets a piece of it to score. Just two very smart players.
That's right. Petey, he just makes that slight hesitation after gaining the line. He threads the puck past, I'm pretty sure, at least two, if not three, Pittsburgh defenders. And yeah, I think it was Jeff Carter that was not the fastest guy. Besser's not the fastest guy. So two slow guys going to the puck, going to the net. And yeah, you're right. An excellent pass by Petey. And yeah, Besser scoring. We've talked about this. Not just his wrist shot. He's a lot of deflections, even backhand roof daddies. Like he's doing great.
So yeah, good. it's the smarts that he has, right? He has the skill to execute on those. And the second goal of the game as well, right? It's on the power play. It's JT Miller doing that sort of downhill skate just around the left, like right edge of the left faceoff circle, that downhill skate that he does where he can either wire it past you or he can find Besser for the tip, and he goes for option two there. So two tip-ins for Besser, just being in the right place and executing on the play that needs to.
Yeah, similar goals. Besser is going to the net with a stick on the ice. Perfect.
Yep. Then you get Marcus Pettersson scoring, the wrong guy. just a failed clear, shot from the point, gets straight through. And then Elias Pettersson, a minute later, gets it back. And this one, what happened here? This is the tip, I think.
Another deflection, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the shot from the point, and this is it's a disgusting tip, really. Like it's on his backhand and he sort of like chips it back towards the way. Like it's such a weird tip, but it's perfect and it gets passed and it's 3-1 to end the period.
Yeah, just grateful that was a Filip Hronek shot. When he's shooting with our guys in front of the net, he doesn't do the 95 mile per hour slap shots, thank God.
Yeah, they're a little more carefully placed. Although maybe Hronek is placing these into guys' legs, you know?
Right.
Maybe he's saying, eventually, if I do this enough, people will stop getting in the way.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
And
so you
think they'll learn at some point. On the Pittsburgh side, it was Sidney Crosby being one of the best players in the league still, right? Yeah. I mean, he's what, 36 years old now?
Yeah.
If the 8-7-87 math works out for me, he scores his 23rd goal of the year in the second and his 24th with 30 seconds to go in the third. Now, did he do much on that third goal? No. I mean, he won the faceoff. That was big. Yep. And then the puck went in off of his pants, which is unfortunate. but yeah, he gets 23 and 24 to tie the game up. So the Canucks at risk, right? 25-0-0 going into the third period with a lead. And they did blow this lead. However, in overtime, you have a really dangerous play coming in for Pittsburgh, right? This 3-on-1 as they come through. And Filip Hronek, who has... It turns into a 2-on-1, essentially. Crosby peels off.
Yeah.
Hronek has struggled on cross-ice passes in the defensive zone all year, right? Like, how many times have we seen a puck just get through him and find someone back door? This time, though, he gets on one knee and he gets the skate on it and immediately turns up, gets the puck, like finds it, and fires it ahead to Elias Pettersson, who's on a breakaway with Sidney Crosby chasing him down. And just the patience from Pettersson. Just wait, go to the forehand at the last moment. I still have no idea how this puck gets through.
Yeah.
He put it right into his pads and it just sneaks on through. And the Canucks win at 4-3 in OT.
Yeah. You know, just to backtrack really quickly, Crosby's first goal, the 3-2 goal, if you watch the replay, 36 years old and still skate. He's never the fastest skater in the world, but he is so determined. He starts basically in front of his own net and takes the puck and rips it past Demko. And then, I don't know who had the longer shift when Petey scored, whether it was Petey, Crosby, or maybe they're both at the end of shift, because it wasn't too blazing. It wasn't a race between two speedsters. But, yeah, it was great. Petey and Crosby, you know, he'll never slash, hook. He'll try and make a good defensive play, and he tried to. So he didn't try, you know, he didn't knock the puck away, didn't hit Petey's hands. And Petey, such patience. And then a really nice celly, not the most exuberant celly that we're going to talk about tonight. I think you know where I'm going with that, but still a nice celly from Petey after he scored. Yeah,
absolutely. That was great. And I want to go back to 5 minutes left in the game in the third period.
Yeah.
When the Canucks are trying to hold onto this lead and Sidney Crosby ends up with the puck all by himself, 8 feet from the net. And Thatcher Demko he's got a defenseman falling onto him. I think it's Hughes. And just getting out there with the left pad. Demko, this entire road trip was just fantastic. I mean, the goaltending as a whole, right? I mean, you know, we'll talk about the next game, which of course was a shutout for Demko. But even though, you know, I have 3 goals on 35 shots, it's a good night. It's nothing, you know, it's not, it's like an average night for a good goalie, right? A 914 save percentage.
Sure.
You're going to have a handful of those all year. But man, the clutchness of some of those saves, is fantastic.
I know. And a lot of people are not complaining, but they're making mention, oh, his save percentage is 900. Oh, da, da, da. He's 9-1-1 or 10-1-1, whatever it is in the last 11 or 12 games. I'll take that. I don't care what your numbers are.
Yeah, I mean, he's what? He's 22-8-1 this season.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, and he has a 919. That's no big deal as well. A 2.47 goals against average. Number one vote getter for the All-Star game. That should tell the story.
By the way, Spartan, thank you for the $2 donation. We only lose to real teams like the Blue Jacks. Yes, we'll get to that soon. Thank you.
Yeah, for the unfortunately. Donation. Let's then talk about Saturday's game. Another matinee. Was this at 1 o'clock our time?
Correct.
A bit of a defensive battle. Neither team with double digit shots in any of the three periods. Shots were 9-7, 8-7, and 9-9. Total shots 26-23 in favor of Buffalo. And just a very structured. Like it was just a weirdly quiet game that I really enjoyed. Yeah. Like I normally, you know, I love a good 6-5, right? You know, that's or even a 5-3, like a fun, you know, the 6-3 against the Rangers, score a lot of goals, you know, low stress, you have a big lead or something along those lines. That's great. This was just like it was early on a Saturday, just sitting around having lunch and just being nervous a little bit, right? Like that 1-0 lead, thanks to Sam Lafferty, 2 minutes into the second period, where he essentially just gets a shot from the point that hits him. He finds the rebound before anyone else does, bangs into the open net, right? And Lafferty needed one, right? He hasn't scored in a while, and nice for him to, you know, doesn't matter how ugly it is. If once you break that slump, it can be a big boost. But it was just a real testament to this Canucks team and their structure when they're up a goal, right? I mean, we've seen it all year, right? Going to this game 25-0, now after this game against Buffalo 26-0 when leading after two, they just played it perfectly.
Right. And that's the thing, that you look at 1-0 against a pretty bad team. You see shots, 49 total shots. You think, okay, this game was probably pretty boring. But no, all it took was a little bit of a Greenway shoulder to Lafferty after he scored. Then a little bit of JT Miller, high hit, Rasmus Dahlin. This game had feeling, and maybe that's what you're getting at. It was enjoyable and entertaining, despite the 1-0 score, because of all the shenanigans happening.
Yeah, there was some spice to it, right? It was a bit of a spicy game, and it was a tense game, right? That third period, you know, the Canucks defended well, but it's like, man, one shot and we're tied. Right. You know, if this was a 3-0 game, it would have been great. And, you know, a 3-0 win's great, but it wouldn't have had that excitement in the third period of like, man, like, hey, any shot could go. Right. And,
right.
You know, when you have a D-zone faceoff with 4 seconds left or whatever they had, you're like, oh man, like just win the draw. Right. It was just exciting. And it was so early in the day that it was a great way to start the day. I guess late to start the day, but you know what I mean?
What did you think of that Miller hit on Rasmus Dahlin?
It was unfortunate. I think it's 2 minutes. I mean, lots of people will say by the letter of the law, it's you know, not even technically a penalty. But I think I see why you'd call something in that scenario, right? Guy got hit up high, and you know, it looked worse than maybe the actual action was, if that makes sense. But I mean, there was no charge. The elbow was down the whole way. He didn't leave his feet. He didn't like raise the shoulder up high. You know, Dahlin was sort of bent over and he went to hit him, and he caught quite a bit ahead. And then they sort of worked backwards, I think, to make it 2-2 and even it up after Power went after him. But yeah, I mean, it sucks that Dahlin was hurt, although he did come back, which is good. So yeah, I mean, I thought it was fine.
That was strange because... So Rasmus Dahlin, a young, not as good as Hughes, but still very good, like a young superstar center or a very good defenseman, excuse me. And then Owen Power, yet another really good defenseman. He comes to Dahlin's rescue. But I don't, you know, notice this, Parker. Miller is the one who shakes his gloves off first, and the Power's gloves actually don't come off.
Yeah, and they didn't call anything on Miller for that. But Power did go after him, and Miller, I think Miller was just anticipating, like, all right, we're going. But Power didn't see it that way.
Right. And then just 3 minutes after getting out of the box, he has to answer the bell against Eric Johnson in a fight, which was
and Miller can throw him.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there was only a few punches thrown, but he got the takedown.
Yeah, he did.
Look, he's not a guy you really want to mess with. And that was a weird decision, right? I mean, part of it's like, oh, you know, hey, you're Eric Johnson. You're taking JT Miller out for 5 minutes. That's a good trade. But you're Eric Johnson on a team that's down to four D-men at the time, right?
Right.
So that took them down to three defensemen for that entire fighting major, which is... they put Zegmas Gergensen back on defense for a little while, and he almost immediately scored on his own goalie. So that's on Eric Johnson.
Yes. Yeah, but you're right, Miller. And then I always get so nervous, Parker, when Miller's sitting in the penalty box and he's checking out his hands, make sure he hasn't broken any bones. I don't like that.
No, that's not an ideal look, because that's a tough. Yeah. You're early enough in the season, and it's not early, but like it would be healed for playoffs at the very least.
Right.
But you wouldn't have JT Miller for a month or two, and that is not a place you want to be in when you're this hot.
Exactly. Wow, pretty feisty. It was good. By the way, we should go back. Do you think, I know there are a lot of people were talking about this. I was talking about it on my show. Greenway, should that have been a penalty? That little shove after, and it was Lafferty's visor, I guess, that caught him in his cheekbone. That's why it started bleeding. But what do you think?
Right. But the shoulder had to hit the visor for that to happen.
Yep.
It seemed a little greasy. For me, what bugged me, because was it necessarily worse than what Miller did? I don't think so. I didn't see it. There wasn't a ton of replays, but it was like, well, you reviewed one of them for being a potential 5 minute major for a high hit, right?
Yep.
And you didn't even blink twice because it was after the whistle, I guess. That's like this weird distinction of like things that happen after the whistle are fair game. They seem to be right. And you remember the high stick to end the first period, right?
Yep.
Right at the horn, they just let it go. So I was like, well, if you're, you know, why not review that one? Right. Cause you don't have to, if you call a five, you can take it completely off the board now in the NHL. Oh, you don't have to give two. Right. So you could just call it, review it and be like, yeah, it was fine. Or be like, yeah, it's two for, you know, for roughing or even whatever you want to call it. So I didn't love that. I thought that was a little, you know, in a world where head contact is very, you know, not ideal nowadays, right? It's not NFL in the 90s where guys are, you know, crushing people up high, and same with the NHL. Yeah. You know, there's a little bit more safety around around concussions.
And that Lafferty goal is funny. After he puts it in, after he gets hit by Greenway, you don't have to be an expert lip reader to see what the F was that. He says to the ref. And then he skates to go after Greenway. And then it's cool. Like all these bigger guys, Oman and who else, Zadorov, were all standing in front of him saying, no, don't take a penalty. You got your goal, da-da-da.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's bleeding from his cheek.
Yeah. Not ideal. But, hey, he'll take the goal, I'm sure.
Yep. And the rest, I know there are a couple of scrums. There's nothing super dirty after that. But you're right. It was just kind of those intense, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Between the Pittsburgh and Buffalo game, those were two. And I don't know if we put Columbus in that as well. But Pittsburgh game definitely had a playoff feel to it. Buffalo, even though they stink, it was quite an intense game. I don't know if it's playoff feel, but it was good.
Yeah. Alex Tuch really had a part in that. He was running around a good bit. And honestly, look, if I'm a Sabres fan, I love what Alex Tuch was doing, right? You saw your best defenseman go down, your best player really on your team, and you're thinking, all right, I'm gonna go after your guys now, right? See how you like it. That one where he tries to run Quinn Hughes in open ice when Quinn Hughes makes a breakout pass, and then at the last possible moment, Hughes just spins off of it.
Yes.
I was like, man, you got to catch him, right? It literally reminded me of like Russell Wilson's first few years in Seattle, whereas like people were like, oh, you just tackle him, and he's just like running in circles around you. Hughes just does the same thing, right? He's slippery. He's, you know, you can hurt him, but you got to catch him first.
Right. Yeah, it's a little scary, but yeah, you're right. Hughes does that, either that quick spin or sometimes where he just kind of almost looks like he falls back, but just enough to, thank goodness. I just hope he doesn't get caught one day, but whatever.
Yeah. So that takes us to today, Monday. Yep. Canucks against Columbus, and the death of the perfect streak, the 26-0-0. However, they've never lost in regulation after leading after two periods, so that's good. 53 of a possible 54 points when trailing or leading after two. And let's start before we get into that Columbus game, Carol, with 10 gifted memberships. Thank you very much, Carol. So if you're one of the people, Viper, Yessa, Jaskaran, Roadster, Earl, Wallach, Sander, Japan, Terry, if you're one of the people who got a membership, say thank you. Thank you very much, Carol. All right. Canucks, Columbus.
Yeah.
Let's start this one off. I mean, Canucks open the scoring 5.5 minutes in. We also didn't talk, I guess Buffalo, there was that disallowed goal that we missed. But, I mean, great shot from Brock Besser that didn't count, unfortunately.
Oh, you mean the one where Petey went in behind Miller into the zone?
Yeah, and tried to, like, poke it into his skates and then pull it out, but he didn't poke it far enough into his skates. So that sucks that Miller doesn't get that one. How about the lot of line early though? You get a JT Miller slap shot from the point. They sort of, you know, the lot of line comes in, does a nice little cycle for a few seconds, and Zadorov plays to Miller. Miller fires it. It takes a weird hop and finds its way into the net to make it 1-0. But that lead only lasted what, 27 seconds, if my math is correct? Because Chinnikov, Chinnikov just came in and sort of ruined that. Everyone is on the wall in the Canucks zone. You have Bluger and Garland and both defensemen behind, like Bluger and Garland on the wall, both defensemen are behind the goal line.
Yeah.
And puck comes free. They play to Chinnikov in front, and DeSmith gets very aggressive, and Chinnikov just outweights him, goes far side.
I do remember they dumped it in. DeSmith played it, gave it to Cole. You think Cole could have had a play, but he put it into the corner, and then Bluger got steamrolled. And then Garland lost it to Goudreau. Goudreau made a really nice pass to Chinnikov. By the way, so I'm not a Columbus expert, Parker, but they got all these Russian guys. I didn't know they had Chinnikov and the guy who scored their second and third goals and the guy who scored in shootout. Like, all these guys I never either even heard of or can't say their names properly. Did you know they had all these big Russian players on Columbus?
I knew Marchenko.
Yeah.
Because he had a hat trick, so I picked him up in fantasy and he's done nothing since. I didn't know about Voronkov, who scored two. But of course, I knew about Chinnikov because he was a pretty highly touted prospect.
Okay, fair enough.
He was a first round pick a couple of years ago.
Gotcha. Okay.
So tied at one. Ian Cole, not a great night, day, morning, I guess. I think he was probably the weak link in this one, and maybe a Juleson appearance on the horizon.
Saw people talking about that. Yeah, for sure. Load management. Yeah.
And then this third line just comes in and does some work, chips it into the corner. Bluger chips it into the corner. Dakota Joshua gives chase, wins the battle to Bluger. How about this little 180 no look spin pass right onto the tape of Connor Garland at the bottom hash mark all by himself. And he just one times at far post. This line, they're so good.
Yeah. You know what I found interesting about this goal, Parker? It's not a carbon copy, but very similar to the Columbus goal that line was on for defense, right? Strong play along the boards, a nice backhand pass to the slot. So some similarities there. And this time, of course, we were on the good side of it. And Garland, do you like his little stick twirl after he scored?
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you only have six on the year, right? You gotta make the most of them.
Keep twirling. Exactly.
You're getting outscored by Dmitry Voronkov. You know, you better make the most of it. Speaking of Voronkov, second period, Columbus came out firing. 25 shots in the second period for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and their one goal is on the power play. It is Voronkov, just a point shot that finds its way through. I'm assuming it got tipped by Voronkov in front.
Yeah,
which is an ideal. Yeah. So that ties it.
Yeah, look at the replay. Look how big he is, man.
I just looked at his page because I needed his first name to say Dmitry Voronkov. Yeah, he's 6'5", 240.
Yeah.
So that is a monster.
He made Cole look like a little baby there.
Yeah. Yes. And then we get Canucks power play doing some work. And this is just Elias Pettersson alone in space on the faceoff dot. Just that release under the glove. Perfect shot. So in a period the Canucks got shot 25-10, it's a tie period. 1-1, and the Canucks go into the third with a lead.
Yeah, that PD shot was pretty sick. They gave him a lot of time. They didn't close on him. And he can literally pick corners. He's so good.
Yeah, I'm gonna do a little math here.
Sure.
He's on a 108 point pace. And he's been slumping.
Yeah, I know that's way more than I predicted in our little show.
It's ridiculous. Columbus comes on in the third period. Again, only 7 shots in the third period, though. Like Canucks, again, they went into their shell and tried to just go hard defense. And maybe that works a little bit better when you're not in game 7 of a road trip. I'm not sure. Maybe that's having an impact. And because the Canucks have been so good at holding leads. And maybe it's also just variance, right? Like you've had so much, so many successful just defend for the entire third period periods. Right. You're bound to let a couple in, even if they're back-to-back games. And this one just kind of sucked. I mean, from behind the net, DeSmith gets over, and it just somehow gets through him.
Cole was on the ice for this one, as you know, and him and Oman got their wires crossed in the behind the net. Yeah, it's tough because DeSmith played so well. You look at that that goal by itself, you say, man, it's a poor play. It is a poor play, but he made 40-whatever saves on the night.
41 and 44 he stopped. Yeah, so a 932 for DeSmith. Yeah, he was great other than that, right? And you throw enough pucks at the net, things might get through. So what I say, Demko had a 919 save percentage on the year.
Yeah.
Casey DeSmith has a 918.
Wow.
So that's a heck of a tandem. So we go to the shootout. Overtime was... Did anything really happen in overtime? There was a really good save from DeSmith. And that's all I remember.
You know what happened in overtime, Parker? Petey took us off the power play. That's what happened in overtime.
Right. There was the penalty, and then Pettersson just skating back. I think he just put the stick there when he shouldn't have. I don't even think he was trying to break the play up or slow the guy down. I think he was just skating back and put the stick in the guy's legs by accident. It was just one of those ones where just the stick ended up there. Guy goes down. It's an easy call. Overtime just goes back to 3-on-3.
Yeah.
And nobody scores.
What was really neat is, and they made a note on the broadcast about that was basically our all-star without Demko. Yeah. Our 4-on-3 was Besser, Miller, Petey, and Hughes, basically our all-star contingent. Pretty cool. By the way, what'd you think of the, I'll wait till after the game.
Okay. Shootout. Bunch of nothing really. Great chances. Miller and Pettersson both try to go 5-hole. And if you watch the replay, there are holes, like there's a gap on the 5-hole and they missed it. Like both of those shots, there was a sliver about a puck and a half size gap. And they both just missed it and hit the pad. So I don't hate their ideas on those, but of course they didn't work. Marchenko scores a sweet one though, with sort of the quick backhand poke. That DeSmith clearly was not expecting.
Yeah, no, that was good. DeSmith looked solid too. He faced some really good shooters and Kent Johnson and stuff, but DeSmith is great. So I don't play goal. I don't play hockey. Is that, do you blame DeSmith on that one? Or is that just a really nifty play by Marchenko?
I'm never going to give a goalie a hard time for going 75% in the shootout. In general. I don't think that's a really nice play, right? You see a guy go backhand, you're expecting maybe he goes quick upstairs, like short side on the backhand side. Yeah. Or maybe he's going back to the forehand. It's very rare you expect just the quick poke. It's a speed change essentially on the puck. It's a tough one.
And then Pia Suter has to tie it up.
Yeah, and he didn't.
Again, what do you think of that choice?
I rarely criticize shootout choices because it's just like, they wouldn't, it's not like they don't have this, like, more information than we do in that scenario. Right. Yep. It's not like he's like, I forgot we had Brock Besser on our team. Right. Like that's not what the case was, but Brock Besser's like, I think he's something like 4-for-20 in his career. In shootouts, like he's not a good shootout. Like he's got a great shot, But he doesn't have like fantastic hands or anything, right? His Besser's game is based on his shot and his hockey IQ and getting open. It's not very, you know, great in the shootout. I think Pugh Suter was something like 2 for 3 in his shootout career, like not very many opportunities, but he scored a couple. And I'm sure they practice it, and I'm sure they have an internal competition to see who gets those spots. But
And then where's Lincoln's? A bit of a celebration there.
Yeah. I love it. Honestly, look, I mean, imagine Thatcher Demko win, or Casey DeSmith even wins the shootout and does that.
Yeah.
We'd be fired up. We're like, dude, go off. He hadn't won a game in a month, right? He hadn't played in 2 weeks. He requested a trade apparently a few days ago, right? Yeah. Celebrate. Who cares if you're, you know, one of the worst teams in the league? Like, it's not your problem. you haven't been, you know, like, no, I, the people going after him and, or like Canucks fans be like, you're whatever bat you're, you know, fifth worst in the league. It's like, okay, but like, you know, we were really bad for a long time and our guys celebrated when they scored goals and won games. Right? Like it's, I don't know. It's such a weird thing to get nitpicky about.
True. And so I had no problem with the celebration. I thought it was funny, but then when I started to learn the context, then it made a lot of sense. You're right. He requested a trade a few days ago. He reiterated that today. He talked about how he needed this win. It was like the monster had to be let out. I'm not even sure what that means, but yes, the monster had to be let out. He had to win. And by the way, yes, I want to get traded.
Yeah.
But the,
good for him.
You know what's funny though? I looked at the stats, Parker. He started more than half of the games, like 23 out of whatever. Then Spencer Martin has started 13, and then that Tarasov has done 8. So he's had 50% of the starts. I guess he wants more.
Yeah, and he came into the league hot, right? You know, 2019, I think it was. Like I remember him being very good. I'll pull up his stats here. A 923 in his first season. In 33 games. And then his second season, 2020-2021, he had a 916 in 28 games.
Wow.
And that won him the starting job. 2021-2022, he had a 907, which would have been just above league average that year. Like, fine starting goalie, like, you know, maybe 20th best goalie in the league numbers. But with the context of his two previous years, that's a good goalie. Last year, he struggled in 876, and this year, he's at a 906. Okay. So he's probably thinking, you know, hey, maybe on a better team, I'm a better goalie. And probably, right? Columbus's defense isn't a team I look at and be like, oh, that's a stout defensive group, right? I think he could definitely use a change of scenery.
You know what I did notice about Columbus though too is they're actually pretty fast. I noticed they would their forwards at least were fast. I found them quite dangerous actually in the offensive zone.
Yeah, they've got a fairly young team, right? Like they're in a rebuild, obviously. They're looking pretty good. Mm-hmm.
So what I was going to say really quickly is we know that Shorty, Dave Tomlinson, they don't travel with the team anymore, so they didn't get the same treatment up to Toronto, down to Columbus. So they just flew home to be safer. I don't know what Dan Murphy did. I guess he went, and then so they had to bring in a crew that I apparently the play-by-play guy does more like OHL and AHL games, and then Sam Constantino, who we see more in panels. And I thought they were fine, understanding that they're not regular Canucks guys. And apparently across, they're not being like lauded for being amazing, but generally people were okay with the job they did. I'm not sure if you noticed either way.
Yeah, they were fine. It's a tough spot to step into, right? Like you're just like, hey, like this is maybe think about it, right? These are Toronto guys who, you know, they've probably watched, maybe they've watched 15, 20 games this season of the Canucks, and that's nothing against them, right? Like there's a lot of hockey going on. There's a lot of Canadian teams. That's you know, to go in there and especially what we're used to. The top tier broadcasting that we're used to from Shorty especially. Yeah, I mean, it's tough shoes to fill, but they did fine.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I was fine with it. It was good.
So all of that takes it to a 5-1-1 road trip.
Wow.
And it takes the Vancouver Canucks, and it's just bizarre to even look at the standings with how close they were to Vegas and how close they were to LA. Those two teams have absolutely collapsed. Vegas not so, like 4-6 in the last 10, right? It's not good, but it's not the worst.
Yeah.
LA lost 8 games in a row.
Yeah.
They're 2-4-4 in their last 10. Like, they're getting loser points, which is helpful for them. And they still have 4 games in hand on the Canucks. But now they're at the point they win all 4 of those, they'd still be 4 points back, right?
Yep.
And the way they're playing right now, they're not going to win all those.
Yeah.
Canucks have a 7-point gap in the Pacific Division with 38 games to go.
Yep. Yep. And the two teams below the Kings are the ones that are more fascinating. Edmonton 10-0, 10 straight wins. Seattle had 9 straight wins before losing. So that Edmonton, and we kind of touched on this last week when Edmonton only won 7 in a row. They basically caught up to LA. They're 3 points back with 1 game in hand. So they're in essence That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how the rest of the way goes, right? The playoff odds have changed dramatically. Hmm. Just the line graph, that's Edmonton's line graph is crazy. so let's go through. I'm going to use the Athletic for their model, because what we've used all year.
Yeah.
As of right now, they have the Vancouver Canucks projected to finish 4th in the NHL standings, and it's close. Winnipeg around 111, Colorado and Boston and Vancouver around 109 points projected.
Okay.
Winnipeg and Colorado have hit the 100% to make the playoffs mark, or at least 99.5. I imagine it rounds up.
Sure.
The Canucks are sitting at 99%.
Okay.
So we're pretty safe. Where it gets interesting now is the division, right? The Canucks now have the best odds of any team in the NHL to win their division.
Oh.
Boston's sitting at a 55% chance, with Florida right behind them at 35% for the Atlantic. The Metro is between the Rangers and the Hurricanes, 51-37. And then obviously some other teams have little pieces of that pie. The Central, Winnipeg's at 53%, with Colorado at 34%.
Yep.
And Dallas behind them. And then Vancouver is the projected to win the Pacific Division 57% of the time.
Not bad.
And the number two team is the Edmonton Oilers.
Wow. What are they at? 20 something?
22%. The Kings at 14, Vegas down to 7. This is where it gets interesting, right? They have Edmonton now projected at 104 points, 96% chance that the Oilers make the playoffs as of right now. Which makes sense, right? I mean, sure, they're 4th in the Pacific, and you're like, oh, that's not great. But they have 4 games in hand over Seattle, who are behind them.
Yeah.
They're a way better team than Nashville and Arizona and Seattle, frankly. And the run that they're on in their history, I mean, it's really looking like the beginning tailspin of the season wasn't enough to take them out, and it was not the team that they are. So clearly their new coach has been doing some good work over there. But yeah, I mean, they were down to on November 21st, Edmonton was below 50% to make the playoffs, but that was as low as they got, even with how bad their start was. Yeah. So they've essentially this 10 win streak has taken them from 70% up to 96%. And where it gets really interesting is that fifth spot. Right.
Yep.
So it's pretty clear. It's probably going to be Vancouver, Edmonton, LA, and Vegas in some order at the top of the Pacific. In the Central, it's very clear it will be Winnipeg, Colorado, and Dallas in some order over there. That eighth spot is now very interesting, because the Minnesota Wild have won 2 of their last 10 games and have fallen from 60% to take that last spot down to 17%. In the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
Which has brought everyone else up. It's brought Nashville up to 35%. It's brought Seattle up to 34%. And it's brought Calgary up to 34%. So it is essentially a 3-way horse race between Nashville, Seattle, and Calgary for that 8th seed and for the right to hopefully play the Vancouver Canucks in the first round.
What did they give Arizona and St. Louis?
6-3, respectively.
Wow.
So they're essentially done.
I don't get it. How are Arizona and St. Louis 6-3% and Calgary's 34%? And
it's just, again, the model is based on, you know, past performance as well, right?
Okay.
It's based on, I think, the last 3 years, obviously weighted more towards now. Yeah. And obviously strength of schedule comes into play as well. Arizona has the sixth hardest remaining strength of schedule. Whereas the Calgary Flames have the seventh easiest, Nashville has the sixth easiest, and Seattle has the fifth easiest. So that I think is playing into it as well. And the Canucks are sort of in the middle of the pack there.
Sure.
But they do Canucks do have 56% of their games at home, which is one of the highest marks in the league.
So if Seattle or Calgary outplay Nashville, we're looking at five Pacific teams in the playoffs this year.
And we're looking at, I'm looking at some road trip possibilities, if that's the case. I can get to Calgary. I can get to Seattle.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so let's very quickly, all five on a scale of 1 to 10, how much would you make it work? Vancouver plays Vegas in the first round.
That would be so egregiously expensive, I think. So that I probably would not make it happen.
Vancouver play LA in the first round. Let's just work with me here. Would you go?
I'd try. I think tickets would be a little cheaper, and it's a pretty easy flight to get and a pretty cheap flight to get.
Vancouver versus Seattle, no brainer, right?
Yeah, it'll be an expensive ticket, but I would try to go like games 3 and 4.
Sure. Yeah. And the two Alberta teams?
Calgary would be pretty easy to make work, I think. That's an easy, cheap flight that runs like 4 times a day.
Yeah.
Or it's a drive. It's April. It would be like April, May. It's a 10-hour drive.
Well, if you want to use 10 hours in the car, sure. And then, Edmonton is not as easy to get to by flight?
I don't know. I just know you can get Abbotsford to Calgary real easy.
Okay.
And that's probably the move. I'm there sure you can fly Abbotsford to Edmonton as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Wow.
Also, exciting. I for some reason, I'd rather go to a game in the Saddle Dome over the nice Edmonton rink. before it gets torn down.
True. Okay. Well, let's maybe we do a Canucks After Dark roadie. We bring four of our favorite subscribers around down with us.
I was gonna say we're gonna need a lot more memberships.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Carol's helping us, but okay.
Obviously, thanks. Joking. You don't have to give
not,
us your
not for that. Very cool. Awesome. Yeah, I just love this January 15th that we're talking about the Canucks 99% chance of making the playoffs.
They're sitting so pretty that it's it's unbelievable. Normally this time of year I've resigned myself to the Canucks probably being out of it and enjoying a Seahawks playoff loss in the wild card round. Mm-hmm. But now they're already out, and I wasn't even that upset because the team I care more about the Canucks, right? Obviously. Of course. So this is just, I'm just enjoying this ride. Now I'm on the trade deadline train, you know, let's make some magic.
Well, we got 6 weeks to talk about that. I guess we should, talk about, we only have the three games. Well, actually technically five games, wink, wink, nudge, nudge until our next show.
Yeah. So we got five games until the All-Star break, and five games until the next Canucks After Dark, because, unfortunately we will not do a show next week. Because I am on the road for work, and I'm so mad that I'm in Chicago while Chicago plays in Vancouver.
Yeah,
that's so frustrating.
By the way, Carol didn't think we were joking. Another 10 gifts. Thank you, Carol. Very generous of you.
Thank you, Carol. Wow. Much appreciated. Yes, if you get a membership from Carol, please say thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much, Carol. Five games this week. Canucks get a nice little break. I'm sure they flew home right after this game in Columbus. I have to imagine they want to get out of there and get back to somewhere where it's not just a storm on that entire coast. But it's a nice rest, right? Because that game was obviously early. It's not like flying home after a 7 p.m. start on the East Coast, and you don't get home till probably 10, I guess, with a time change.
Right.
You know, they were probably home by 5, 6, 7 o'clock. So they can get some rest because they have the Arizona Coyotes on Thursday, the Maple Leafs on Saturday. Let's start with those two. Let's start with the Coyotes in Vancouver. 2 days of rest for the Canucks. I don't know what the Coyotes are coming off of. The Coyotes will be coming off of 1 day fewer of rest. They're in Calgary tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And they're coming off a 6-0 win against the Wild on and Saturday.
Connor Ingram, third best Connor in the league.
Yeah, he's been good. And that's something that might give them some playoff hope. Is him. Although I'm not sure the NHL will love a 5,000 seat arena in the playoffs. but it should be. That's a game the Canucks should win. They have the firepower. They're the better team. I'm not too concerned about that one, which is nice.
Have you
a nice
have you found traditionally though the first game back after a long road trip, I always feel like the Canucks are very flat, very flat.
Yeah, that's true. However, I would have said for most of that road trip that the Canucks should have been flat and they weren't. Tocchet's got these guys playing really good, and I gotta wonder if just the high of how well they're playing is just gonna drive them for as long as it can. Either way, I don't care about this game. If I would so much rather them lose this game and beat Toronto, they could lose. I would rather instead of the Canucks going 3-1 over the next four games, I'd rather the Canucks go 1-3 and have that one be against Toronto.
That's how much you like Toronto. Yeah, that's funny, man. Yeah,
because I believe it's also Hockey Day in Canada on Saturday. And I believe Hockey Day in Canada is in Victoria, and I'll be there. So I'm going to try to get involved.
Get on TV.
I'll try to get in there. So Saturday, January 20th, Maple Leafs in Vancouver. Of course, it's a 4 o'clock start. Everyone get mad. Even though it's a Saturday, 4 p.m. game's lovely on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this one going?
Toronto's reeling. They're only 4-4-2 in their last 10. They've lost two in a row, including getting embarrassed by Detroit yesterday.
Yeah, that's tough. Detroit shows up 90 minutes before puck drop.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know that? That's why the game got moved from 4 o'clock Eastern to 4:30. Because the Red Wings weren't going to make it in time. And they literally, I saw tweets coming through. It was like an hour 40 before puck drop. And someone was like, yeah, the Detroit's not here yet. Like they're not at the rink. And then there was another tweet 10 minutes later. I was like, they have arrived 90 minutes before puck drop.
Wow.
That's classic Leafs though, to lose that game.
Sure. So in my 14 years of being a season ticket member, and I'm not showing off, I'm just talking reality, I've only seen one Canucks Maple Leafs game, because usually my partner takes it, season ticket partner takes it, or we just sell it because it makes sense to do so. This one, I can't even go. I'm actually at a wedding. So I can't wait to see the highlights saying that we beat them 7-2 or something like that. I would just love that. That's just one team I just love beating. Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
Battle of the All-Stars, R5 against their 3 or whatever. Yeah. Four.
They have four.
They're 4. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a star-studded cast.
Yeah.
It'll be so good. Hopefully they win that one. Monday, the 22nd, which would ideally have been where our next Canucks After Dark is, but it will not be.
Yeah.
Unless I really make some magic happen, but I doubt it. It'll be midnight in Chicago. Chicago is bad.
Yeah.
2 wins in their last 10. They've won 12 games all year. No Bedard in the lineup. This should just be a stomp, move on. No big deal.
Hopefully. Their goal differential is -61. That's worse than our inverse of +54.
Yeah, that's second worse in the league by... And, because there's only two teams that have a really bad goal differential.
Yeah.
Right? The Sharks at -93. And the Black.
That's right.
Yeah. No. I know. They've won 10 games this year. And the Blackhawks at -61. The next worst is -37. It's so much better. Half a goal a game better. The Blackhawks are bad.
You know, and then -93 for San Jose in 44 games, you think, oh, that's an average of 2.2. But remember, they've won 10 of those games. So that's basically in 31 losses. That's crazy.
I don't remember exactly, but I think, and I know the NHL actually allows you to go back in time in the standings, and I might need to do that here. I'm going to go back in the standings to November 20th. Let's see.
Okay. Okay.
San Jose had scored. Okay. I was going to say they've scored 2 goals a game right now, San Jose. They have 88 goals in 44 games, which is atrocious. Yeah. And I was like, I feel like I made fun of that like early in the season. It was worse. On November 20th, they had played 18 games. They had 27 goals. They had a goal and a half a game.
Oh my gosh.
So that was, never mind. I take back what I was going to say. Although at one point, November 6th, they had 12 goals in 11 games when they were 0-10-1. So they're getting better.
Oh yeah. Barely.
Barely.
Wow.
We're talking about San Jose. The Canucks don't play San Jose again this year.
No, sorry. Got too excited there. Yeah.
Wednesday, January 24th, we've got the Blues at home. Again, all these games are at home before the All-Star break, which is fantastic. Five-game homestand. Again, lost to the Blues because they couldn't get any offense going. Yep. They should be able to beat the Blues. And they get the Blue Jackets again. These are four teams that they should absolutely demolish and one team that is pretty much a toss-up, I would say. Yeah. Although the Canucks will be the favorites in that one. They'll be at home. They should be the favorites in that game. So five
games
in which the Canucks are going to be the favorites.
I got it in my head. You got yours?
Yeah, 1-4. go ahead.
3-1-1.
Yeah, that's about the pace they've been on, right? Yeah. It just feels like this run's got to stop at some point. It's got to slow down a little bit. But they did lose today, and we'll say that counts. So we'll go 4-1.
Wow, nice.
And the one will be against Chicago for some reason while I'm there and make me miserable.
Angela saying 1-4, RP saying 5-0. Okay, we're getting all extremes. But yeah, how many games over 500 are we now? So 18.
Enough,
right? Yeah,
18. Yeah, 18, 29, 11, and 4.
Okay.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, these are not imposing teams. I'm just looking at the schedule, the calendar. It does, not imposing at all. It's crazy. These five home games, then All-Star break, then five away games, then like a two, then a three, and then there's a 9-game homestand in March, man. That's crazy.
And here's the thing, right? Yep. This is a chance for the Canucks to, again, they have a bit of a gap in the Pacific.
Yeah,
this is a real chance to grow that, because while the Canucks play four bad teams out of their next five games, frankly, mm-hmm. Vegas has six games before the All-Star break. They are doing they play the Rangers, the Penguins, the Devils, the Islanders, the Rangers again, and then the Red Wings. Wow. That's a tough schedule. That's a tough stint going into the All-Star break.
Yeah,
the Kings play the Stars tomorrow. They have the Preds, who aren't that good, but they do play the Rangers. They play the Avs before the
Holy
All-Star
smokes.
Break. But then they do play the Sharks and Sabres. So they're going to go like 3-3 on average.
Yeah.
And the Oilers, who have been hot, they've got it easy as well, right? Which makes sense because all these teams are coming to Vancouver. They're going to go to Edmonton as well. So they also have the Maple Leafs, Kraken, Flames, Blue Jackets, Blackhawks, Predators. So the Oilers are going to win a bunch of games. But Vegas and LA could fall off a little bit or continue to fall off, I should say. And the Canucks should really win four of these next five.
They should,
which would take them to 70 points at the All-Star break in 49 games.
Yeah. 21 games over 500 at the All-Star break. Amazing.
It'll be unbelievable.
Oh, this feels good. I love it. I love it.
Feels great.
I can't believe we're not going to, talk online for 2 weeks because, or at least not have our show, which reminds me, I want to address it once. So we already know, we knew that we, with so many games that we weren't going to get to everyone today. So we do appreciate Carol. Thank you for the 20 memberships you've given Spartan. Thank you for the donation. I won't spend too long on it, but just really quickly, all you guys know the news about Game Over and the seven shows across the country being cut as part of some cost cutting, which is unfortunate. Parker and I, we talk outside of the shows. We were grateful for that opportunity. We're also grateful that we have this show. We have our own shows, and we give a lot of love to those that to everyone that lost their kind of position, whether it was full time, part time, stipended, whatever you want to say. But we're grateful that we had a chance to work with some of those people. Maybe we can whip up some collabs with some of them, especially with Kai and with Sam. But we're also very lucky that we have this platform as well. So we wanted to thank you collectively for following us over there on SCPN as well. Mm-hmm. And however they come out of it, we hope that they do well as well. We're still going to connect with them, but we're going to keep on marching forward with this show for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Out of everyone, we are in like the best position to not be as affected, right? Like we were doing it as a sort of a supplement to what we're already doing. And You know, a year and a half ago, you weren't doing it. I did 13 shows, I think.
They're the best 13 shows on the network.
I think I was a guest on like five. So, you know, for us, it's not a big change. For, you know, some other people, it's much more impactful. Of course, we hope that that they, you know, continue on and get back involved, because there's more than enough space, especially in this big market here. So
for sure.
With that, make sure that you follow either of us on Twitter, Parkus Pucks, Canuck Clay. Same with YouTube, because that's where you'll find us most of the time. I'm doing videos after most Canucks wins, usually.
Awesome.
and Clay's out there making videos for everything.
I just love how you admit it. Like you say in your videos, I will do a video if they win. And granted, they're winning 2/3 of the time, so it's awesome. But yeah, you just flat out say it. I love it. I love that.
It's nothing against making videos after a loss. It's that I'm scared to death of the YouTube algorithm.
I heard you say that. Yeah, I heard you explain that on your show.
Because that's I don't want it to just kill me. Either way, next Monday, you probably won't have us, hopefully we do have some Canucks wins to come back to. We didn't really talk about the All-Star break coming up, which I'm very excited about. I'm so excited about how they're doing the skills this year. How's this going to be 12 players, all the same players, just doing
good
like a
players.
Decathlon.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Way better way to do it than just like showcasing the people's skills. It's like, oh, it's a real competition for $1 million on the line. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
So we will come back. I don't know if we're going to recap all five games. The All-Star break, All-Star games, the festivities will be the freshest on our mind when we do that show on the 29th. So we will figure it out, but there's always going to be a lot of stuff to talk about for sure.
Yeah.
On
Maybe we're talking about Elias Pettersson just running the table. In
there you go.
Event.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
Except for Fastest Skater, but.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one for him in comparison to some of the competition. Yeah, folks, make sure you're subscribed here. Canucks After Dark, we're here most Mondays. I can't say every Monday when we're not going to be here next week. If you missed any part of the show, you can rewind back to the beginning. You can find it on your favorite podcast platform in a matter of 10, 15 minutes or so, whether it's Spotify, Apple, Google, whatever you use. Just make sure you follow us over there as well. Otherwise, hit the like button, hit subscribe. Have a fantastic night. Clay's live in 13 minutes. Go over there. Have a good one.
Thanks, man.